Hello, my name is Chrissy Champagne. You are listening to Residue, a true crime podcast dedicated to keeping you paranoid. I am going to be doing something a little different today. I'm going to tell two short stories about two different cases that I happened to come across this week. And these are both cases featuring two sets of best friends and a feud that started on Facebook. This will be an episode where I will just tell you two short stories about the dangers of social media. It is 2011 in Des Moines, Iowa, and Jennifer Harris has just moved back into town. She has been away for a bit. She wants to hook up with her old high school friend, Nikki Rasmussen. Now, Nikki hasn't seen Jennifer in quite a bit, and Nikki has now married, has started a family, she has children. She's becoming, you know, an adult. She doesn't want to party hard anymore. She doesn't really dig the social scene. And Jennifer is newly single and has a young daughter, so she's pretty anxious to kind of get out there and, you know, hang out in bars, party a little bit. She doesn't want to be sitting at home alone. Now, Nikki isn't, you know, super lame. She's gonna still hang out with her friend. She's just on a different level right now. So one day, Jennifer asks Nikki if she can come over and help her set up a Facebook event because Jennifer's new to Facebook and she didn't quite understand how to set up one of those events where you can invite people to your party. Jennifer was having her 30th birthday party and she was going to call it her Dirty 30. So Nikki went over to her house and showed her how to set up a Facebook event notice, and Jennifer proceeded to invite tons of people to come out to this amazing Dirty 30 party that she was going to throw for herself downtown. At this point, Jennifer seems to be asking Nikki for a lot lately, and their friendship is kind of taking a turn because Nikki just ain't on the same wavelength here. So she doesn't want to keep going over to help Jennifer all the time. She notices that Jennifer's out drinking a lot. She's leaving her daughter home alone a lot. Her daughter's 9, and Nikki is not down. But Nikki feels like since her and Jennifer have been friends basically their entire lives, just not entire adult lives, that, you know, just go over, help her, be a good friend, hang out with her. But Nikki's starting to feel like this relationship is incredibly forced. It is now the end of September in 2011, and Jennifer is getting really worked up because it's almost her birthday and nobody is replying to this Facebook event. She's getting a lot of no, can't go, maybe, but nobody is saying that they want to hang out with Jennifer on her birthday, and it's starting to make her really anxious and really just, you know, she's pissed off. Nikki is probably at this point like, oh my God, please no one show up so I don't have to go to this thing. I know that's mean, but she probably felt that way. But anyway, Jen starts telling Nikki, you know what? Fuck everyone else. Fuck them all. They don't have to come to my birthday. It'll just be me and you and we'll hit the town. We'll be downtown all night dancing away my dirty 30s. And Nikki's like, oh, hell no, dude. I am not going downtown alone with you. I have a kid. I have a husband. I don't even want to be doing this if there's 30 other people there. So Nikki says, you know what? No, Jen, I can't do it. And you know what, Jen? You can't be leaving your daughter home alone by herself so that you can go out and drink. She says this to Jennifer. Of course, Jennifer loses her damn mind when she says that. And instead of Talking this out with her friend Nikki, she goes to Facebook to vent. You know, we all love a good vague booker here on Residue, don't we? Jen is now on Facebook just ranting and raving about what a dumb jerk Nikki is because she won't come to her birthday party. And she at first doesn't come right out and say it's Nikki. She writes something like, imagine if your friend planned your birthday party and then she said she's not going, which clearly it was not what happened, Jen. Okay. But to make the story more interesting for Facebook and all the Facebook land, she said that Nikki was basically ruining her entire birthday party now, even though none of these other people even gave a shit about Jen or her stupid birthday. Jen is just slandering Nikki's name all over Facebook. And even though Nikki doesn't want to be a part of this, you know, she is writing back also, and she's trying to explain her side of it. And nothing's getting through to Jen. She's just on rage mode. And she ends up leaving a horrible comment for everyone to see. And what it said was, I'd rather be single than in a loveless marriage for convenience. Girl. Now, Nikki had once confided in Jennifer that, you know, she was pregnant before they got married. And so Jennifer's now using that, you know, secret that her friend shared with her and just exploiting it and hitting Nikki where it hurts, so she thinks. Even though that wasn't the case, none of this was the case, she still threw out that insinuation for everyone in the land of Facebook to believe now that Nikki is in this horrendous marriage. So after that is said, Nikki is like, yo, fuck this. Deletes Jen, blocks her, she's done. Nikki's done, but Jen, no, Jen is not done. Jen writes on her Facebook page, if you want to start something, game on. And Nikki's like, what? I can't hear you because I blocked you. Yeah, but so even though Nikki blocked her, Nikki still has friends on Facebook who are reading this. And so, of course, they reach out to Nikki and tell her what Jen has written. So Nikki doesn't do anything at all. She just stays quiet. She's moving on with her life. This is the end of Jen. It is now 1 a.m. on October 27th, 2011, and Nikki is awoken suddenly because she can hear something that sort of sounds like firecrackers going off outside of her bedroom window. Nikki looks outside of her bedroom window and notices that her entire garage is completely engulfed in flames. It is so bad that it's moving towards the house now. Even the side paneling on the side of her home is now melting. So Nikki gets up, grabs her husband, grabs her child, who is in the home too, and runs out of the house as they call 911 for help. Of course, Nikki knows right away, this is totally Jennifer. Jennifer did this. And the fire department and the police, they start asking Nikki and her husband, do you know anyone who would want to do this to you? Arson usually stems from a revenge desire. So the Des Moines Police Department calls Jennifer Harris on October 28th, 2011, and they record the call. And in this call, Jennifer admits that she was upset with Nikki. But she starts, you know, telling them the whole story again and playing victim and blaming everything on Nikki. The police are like, girl, stop talking. Did you set this garage on fire? And Jennifer Harris admits to setting her ex-best friend Nikki's house on fire. Not the house, the garage. So what she did was she got angry. She went over to Nikki's house. She takes a roll of toilet paper, sets it on fire, and throws it straight into Nikki's garage because she defriended her on Facebook. Now, there is a quote from a clinical psychologist in this episode that I watched of Snapped. It's a great episode. I have it linked in my show notes if you want to check it out. So clinical psychologist Dr. Michelle Goland says, it's the ultimate form of friendship betrayal. I'm not going to be friends with you anymore, and everyone is going to know it. And that is regarding anyone who defriends you or blocks you on Facebook. Nikki and her husband would lose everything inside of that garage. The garage itself would be considered a total loss, and so would both vehicles. I mean, they were massacred. Jennifer Harris would end up being charged with second-degree arson, and she would spend 2 years probation, making full restitution and a $1,000 fine. The judge did say that there was one thing that he was going to put on the table that had to be done. Jennifer was going to have to go to rehab. So on May 10th, 2012, in order to avoid a first-degree arson charge, which would actually demand a mandatory 25-year sentence, she was going to plead guilty to a second-degree arson charge, and she would spend 6 months in jail. I am happy to report that ever since this incident, Jennifer Harris has remained sober and blocked on Facebook. Interrupting this episode of Residue to introduce you to a new true crime show that I know you're going to enjoy.
Do you love true crime and travel? Having traveled the world solo the last couple of years and being obsessed with true crime, I found myself researching others who took the same vacations but never made it home. The Last Trip is a true crime podcast covering missing and murdered people that were living their best lives on vacation. I'm your host, Jamie Beebe, and each week I'll bring you on The Last Trip, taking a deep dive into vacation culture and travel spots, tips on staying alive while traveling, and ultimately recreating someone's last days in paradise. What led to their last trip? What are the hard facts? What is the final outcome? And could you be next? David Sneddon was a 24-year-old college student from Utah attending Mandarin classes in Beijing when he mysteriously disappeared while hiking Tiger Leaping Gorge. Chinese authorities said he drowned in the gorge, and U.S. authorities agreed, although his body was never found and his parents didn't believe that. 7 years later, out of the blue, they got a phone call from a former U.S. official who had evidence David is still alive. This case sounds like a Hollywood movie, but evidence doesn't lie. So where is David Sneddon? Famous rugby player and celebrity X Factor contestant Levi Davis went missing in Barcelona last year while on a backpacking trip through Europe. Just days before he vanished, he posted a 15-minute video to his Instagram account saying his life was in danger and people were after him. After he disappeared, several theories emerged. But what really happened to Levi Davis? Join me, Jamie Beebe, co-host of the popular true crime series Strictly Stalking, as I embark on a brand new adventure combining true crime and travel. Listen to The Last Trip wherever you get your podcasts.
Our next story takes place on February 28, 2011 in Brooklyn, New York. We are at the Cypress Hills Houses, and this is a community, an apartment building community that is known to be a pretty rough area. There is said to be lots of gang violence, drugs. The area gets a bad reputation. So this call comes in, but this call wasn't what you would think it would be coming from a place that people say has a tough rep. This was a call over a Facebook feud. Kamisha Richards and her family moved into the Cypress Hills complex as a young child. Kamisha was in elementary school when she moved in, and she ends up meeting a friend inside of this apartment complex. Her name is Kayla Henriquez, and Kayla was 4 years younger than Kamisha, but Kamisha acted like a big sister to Kayla for their entire lives. As the two best friends grow up, Kamisha is one to love school. She loved learning. She loved working hard and trying to achieve her goals. She was trying her hardest to become a lawyer. That was something she wanted to become. And her brother says that she actually loved to debate. At this point in life, Kamisha was studying criminal justice and she had an internship at a law firm. Her sister, Anaya, says that Kamisha was just a winner in everything that she did. Kamisha really made it a point to, you know, push her younger siblings towards school and the fact that you have to graduate, you have to keep working hard. And she did this also with Kayla, her best friend, who wasn't even just a best friend. Kayla was more like sister. She was blood. She was someone that Kamisha really wanted to take care of. Kayla ends up becoming a mother in 2010 when her baby was born. Kamisha helped with almost everything. She even threw Kayla's baby shower for her. At this point in life, Kamisha is helping Kayla out a lot. She's letting her borrow money whenever she needs it. And one day, Kayla asks Kamisha if she can borrow $20 because she needs to get milk for the baby. Kamisha, of course, lends her $20, but she notices that on Facebook, it looks as though Kayla's not using the money for baby milk. She's using it to party with her friends. You know those people that ask you to borrow money and then they never even offer to pay it back, but then you see them on Facebook like flaunting some new furniture they bought or some new shirt they bought and you're like, what the fuck? Where's my 20 bucks? So this is exactly what's going through Kamisha's head. She's like, what the hell, man? Like, I let you borrow this money for your baby. Now I want my 20 bucks back, so you better be giving me my $20 back, like, stat. So on Facebook is where the fighting first starts, and the two girls are going back and forth, and Kamisha's basically like, pay me my money, and Kayla is, you know, snapping back at her. The argument's going on, and all of their Facebook friends can see everything that is happening. It was said by a couple of family members and friends that Kayla at this point was starting to act a little bit like she was getting annoyed with the fact that she was always being compared to Kamisha. And it felt like she was reaching her breaking point since it felt like her life wasn't going the way that she planned it and Kamisha's was on the road to success. So when Kamisha is posting that she needs to pay her money back, Kayla admits that this is when she kind of lost it. So pay her money then. Just pay her money and stop posting about it on Facebook. She wouldn't have had to post about it on Facebook if you had just made a little bit of an effort, even just a dollar, anything you could give back. From what I could see, one of the girls wrote, "Never fuck with me, so chuck it up, deuces." And I believe it was Kamisha that wrote something like, "I'll have the last laugh." And Kayla wrote back, "We'll see." So this is now escalated from Facebook messages to Kamisha going straight to Kayla's house and knocking on her door, going straight inside of her house and showing up to either, collect the money or just like have it out face to face. Witnesses say that Kamisha showed up at Kayla's apartment, asked for the money, and then Kamisha walked straight into Kayla's kitchen, went into her freezer, took out her baby formula, and then just dumped it out on the floor and said to Kayla, "Now we're even." Now, the rest of the story is from Kayla's viewpoint and from what Kayla says. So Kayla says now that Kamisha grabbed a pair of scissors and Kayla grabbed a kitchen knife because she thought, well, I have to defend myself because Kamisha's coming at me with a pair of scissors. She says that Kamisha swung the scissors towards her and Kayla just took one swing in self-defense. This whole incident actually took place inside of a bedroom with the door closed inside of Kayla's apartment. So after Kayla swung the knife towards Kamisha, she walked out of the bedroom door and then walked straight out of the apartment. There are other people inside of Kayla's apartment at this point. None of them actually saw what happened inside of that bedroom because the door was closed, but Kamisha comes out of the bedroom, and the bystanders, they said that she acted very calm and that she stayed under control, and she kept saying, "She stabbed me, she stabbed me." So the people inside of the apartment, they call 911, and 911 arrives at the apartment complex, but by the time they arrive, Kamisha has already passed away. It was not hard to track down Kayla because the moment she ran out of that apartment building, she left a trail of blood. And the police just followed that trail of blood and brought Kayla down for questioning. While she's being interrogated, of course, she plays the victim. And she starts telling the police about everything that happened online. She's still going on and on about this $20 and this milk. Like, girl, you just killed your best friend, your sister. Stop playing the victim. Kayla explains to the police that she just lost it. And she said, "You don't have to post stuff on Facebook like trying to make me feel like I'm poor or something over $20. Kayla tells the police that this was definitely self-defense. She is charged with second-degree murder, and if she stood trial, she could possibly serve 25 to life. But Kayla accepts a plea deal. She pleaded guilty to manslaughter, and she was sentenced to 15 years. Nicole Coulter Henry, the mother of Kamisha, says there is a special place in hell for her and what she did to Kamisha. The judge gave Kayla the opportunity to address the family and apologize for her actions. Kayla just stared straight at the judge and said nothing. And that's the thing, is that everyone can lose their temper online. Everyone can say mean things, mean hurtful things to each other. But when faced with the opportunity to look someone straight in the face and say it then, it's just silence. Okay, I'm going to delete my Facebook page right now. Just kidding. I need you to come join me on my Facebook page. It's Residue, a true crime podcast. And then there's also Instagram, Residue Podcast. If you enjoy the show, it would be so cool of you to share some episodes with your friends, share social media posts. That's the kind of thing that really gets people to notice the shows that you like. And also, I wanted to mention that you should definitely check out The Last Trip with Jamie Beebe. It is a fantastic true crime podcast. She also has another podcast called Strictly Stalking, which I have been listening to for years and years. I also want to shout out another podcast that I think you should check out called World of Horror Podcast. I actually just did a guest spot on that, and I will be letting you know when that episode airs. I'll also be at CrimeCon in a couple of weeks. If anyone else is going, I'll be there handing out stickers and chit-chatting with people. Oh, wow, that was a big lot of plugs there for a little bit. But please join me again next week, and in the meantime, stay safe and stay paranoid.